to the Smarter Building Materials Marketing Podcast, helping you find better ways to grow leads, sales, and outperform your competition.
All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Smarter Building Materials Marketing, where we believe your online presence is your best salesperson. I'm Beth Popnikolov, your host. I've given Zach Williams the day off. And in the studio with me today, I have Jordan Russin. He's the co-president of Russin, a distributor and manufacturer of building products, primarily in the exterior of buildings in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic. And he is in the studio with me to talk about distribution and all of the really interesting things that they do from a customer front to be that thought leader, trusted guide, great partner, and how the distribution, customer, and dealer relationship looks from their perspective and what you need to know about that. Jordan, thanks so much for your time. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Beth.
I'm excited to have you. Before we jump in, can you take a few minutes and share with our listeners a little more about yourself and about Russin?
Along with my brother, I'm the co-president and co-owner of Russin. We are a third-generation distributor and manufacturer of building products, as you said. We are headquartered in the beautiful town of Montgomery, New York, and we service from mid-coast of Maine down to Charlottesville, Virginia, west to Pittsburgh and Buffalo.
Jordan, where I want to start with you is something that I know is really close to Russin, which is the evolution of the distributor and how you interact with customers and what customers need from you. So can you walk me through the evolution and the history of what did your customer relationships and interactions used to look like at the origins of Russin as a distributor, and what do they look like now?
So I think we are a very different company today from my father's distribution company. And I think the role of a distributor has changed demonstrably in the last 15, 20 years. I mean, if you really boil it down, my dad's distribution business, we were a warehouse, we were a bank, and we were a trucking company. And all three of those things are still incredibly important today. You need to be all three of those and be really, really strong at all three aspects. And your ODIF scores need to be really high, or your customers are just not going to appreciate all of the other things that you bring to the table. But I think a distributor today needs to be a lot more of a demand creator than they were in the past. I think a distributor needs to be a creative marketer. I think a distributor needs to be an expert in product curation. And I think a distributor needs to be able to think their way downstream to the market, to the homes that they'll ultimately be supplying, and think about how those products are going to get to those homes in a way that 20, 25 years ago, we just never knew.
What's the underlying cause that you would identify that's pushed that change from how you were able to operate 30 years ago to where you need to operate today?
The internet has irrevocably changed our business. I remember back when I was first starting with Russin full-time, and I was a road salesman in North Jersey, and I'd go into a lumber yard with a couple of samples under my arm, and I'd give a little dog and pony show and explain the performance benefits and how it installs and the warranty. And they'd take a little display and they'd put it on their counter and they'd sell it. I think a lot of distributor salespeople still do that, and they still have the samples, and it's still important to provide the education. But I don't think consumers today go to lumber yards primarily to get educated. I think consumers today go to lumber yards to confirm what they've already learned online and to feel really good about the choices that they're leaning towards through the internet searches that they've done, through the homework that they've done on social media. And that dealer is more of a point of confirmation than a point of first thought. And the dealer's role increasingly is just to share some expertise and help the homeowner or the architect or the builder to feel really good about the choice that they're making. And then, of course, to prove that they can get the materials there when the customer needs them in the right condition.
So if I'm hearing what you're saying, because we talk about this a lot, we talk about the pressure that the continually more and more educated customer puts on everyone. That educated customer puts pressure on distributors to be able to have a more elevated conversation. Manufacturers feel it also. We did a webinar with LBM Journal just last week, and I have to continually re-look up the stat how many in-person purchases start online because it changed. There's a new data point out about it, like, I don't know, every third day. So I looked at it just last week, and it's 81% of in-person B2B purchases. That's not necessarily B2C. B2C is probably just even a bit higher. So it's 81% of B2B purchases that happen in person start online, and lumber's right up there around that average too. I think lumber and exterior products are somewhere around 69-70%. And the reason I mention that is because exactly what you said, that education used to come from the lumber dealer or the distributor, and now it happens online. So my question is, what are the sources that you think customers are using when they come to you? And do you find they're using reliable sources? Are there sources you're hearing regularly?
I think the answer is yes to all of that.
Yeah.
Our job as a distributor and our job as a consultative sales team to end users and through our dealers is really to help our customers ferret out the noise. And I also think, you know, one of the realities, because of the growth of the internet as a tool for online choice, and also just the amount of choice that's available to a architect, to a homeowner today. You know, one of the things that used to happen 20, 25 years ago was Mrs. Jones would put down a gray composite deck and Mrs. Smith would see that she's no longer maintaining it and sealing it and staining it. And she would say, I want a gray composite deck too. And she would buy the same thing. And that still happens to a degree. But I think what happens more and more is Mrs. Jones puts down a gray composite deck and Mrs. Smith says, well, I want something that's low maintenance too, but I want something that speaks to my own unique sensibilities and that's really specifically for me and isn't exactly what Mrs. Jones did. And then Mrs. Smith spends 40 hours researching on the internet and calls up one of our dealers with far more expertise in the subject matter than the dealer could ever possibly have, because the dealer has to know everything about windows and framing and every other part of a home you could possibly imagine.
Yeah. Very easy to solve at the micro level, right? Because we're solving for what any individual has decided is the most important. And I know, I mean, you mentioned homeowners, but you guys deal with a lot of architects and it's the same. Different firms, different architecture firms have a different starting point depending on the project, the building, the owner of the building. Everybody has their own priorities. So basically, we just do everything for everyone? No.
Well, yeah, we kind of do. And I should explain my biases, which is that Russin, by and large, lives in the high-end, ultra-high-end space. I think when you're dealing with architecture firms, there are certainly firms out there that use the same materials in every single build and design roughly the same handful of projects over and over again. Those aren't the firms that I'm generally interfacing with. But when you're dealing in a higher end space, they start every project from a blank sheet of paper and review the client's goals for the project and then start Googling. And then they call us with a zillion questions because of the things that they found online. And it's our job to help zero them in on a path that's actually achieved.
I want to make sure that we call out that last point that you made, because one of the things that we really try at Venvio and on the Smarter Building Materials podcast to emphasize is how technology should further relationships, not replace it. So we've talked a lot about how that online research piece, frankly, has replaced those conversations, at least the starting point of the conversations in a lumber dealer location, or if you're a manufacturer, that's the same for you, your sales reps, the very first question was brought to them. Importantly, though, Jordan, you're getting the right questions brought to you. You're getting an educated customer who is ready to buy from you and who you've built trust with to say, okay, I've done my research and now here's the pointed conversation that I want us to have so that we can both get to the best end goal and I can have the best project, you can have the best customer relationship and end of purchase experience. And it's not replacing your expertise. Your expertise is still really important because customers want to get that like somewhere between 85 to 90% of the way down the funnel. Most people, when you're buying millions of dollars worth of product, you kind of want somebody who's done it 1,000 times to give you the thumbs up, right? They want that check off from an expert to say, yeah, you're good. You're not about to write a $1 million check. That is going to not be exactly what you want.
For sure. And, you know, and we get calls from architects all the time that sometimes are only tangentially related to the products that we sell, but they've learned that we're trusted resources. And I had a call on Friday with an architect we've done a lot of work with. And she said, hey, I'm working on this public park project. This is what I'm thinking. Just tell me I'm not crazy. And I said, I wish you were using a different material, but you're not crazy. And you're headed down an okay path.
I think that's the dream. That has got to be on, if you have a customer scorecard of like, how trusted of a resource are we? It's if I'm not buying from you, but I'm still asking for your opinion, we want less of those than the amount when you're buying from me and want my opinion. But having that exact experience, man, if that's not a plus one on your NPS score, I don't know what is. I mean, that shows that you are truly, truly trusted, frankly, more trusted than the source that they're using for the product.
Yeah. And also, you know, along those lines, I view a big part of our job as defining who is not our customer and helping that person who's not our customer to very quickly get onto the path that they need to be on and help them understand what's the best path forward for them. Hey, you may not be an appropriate fit for us, but you should call these folks. They'll take good care of you. You should go onto this website. It's a really authoritative source. Or conversely, a lot of folks may very well be our customer, but just may not be far enough down the decision funnel. So then it's our role to just point them in the right direction, give them some places where they can go that have some authority and can help them develop the expertise that they need, and then set up the time to talk again when they're a little further down.
And is there anything that's going to make you trust somebody more than someone who's selling something and says, don't buy the thing that I'm selling, buy the thing that this guy is selling that I will make $0 for? That is a blank check that will, at some point, you'll get the benefit of cashing in on. That's genius. Okay, so I want to pull us up because that's quite the journey from the evolution you're talking about of how you used to do business and how you do business now. I imagine that didn't happen overnight. And I don't know if it was an intentional, like, hey, we need to figure out how to do this. But if you could share from a 30,000 foot view, what does it look like or what did it look like for you guys to take in that customer feedback and have the realization that, oh, we have to switch how we do business and then roll out what is a very fundamental how we do business change?
I should say, you know, Russin is a distributor and a lot of our business today still remains traditional products, things like pine boards and Western Red Cedar products that we've been selling to our dealer customers for 30, 40 years. And our dealers will call us and they'll buy 2,000 board feet of some item for their inventory. And we're extremely grateful for them for doing that. And certainly hope they're going to continue to do that for a long, long time to come. At the same time, though, as we're looking to grow, our role, as I think I mentioned earlier, is to be experts in product curation and to bring our dealers products that they may not be currently thinking about, but that we believe are going to move the industry forward. And most of those products don't come with eight-figure marketing budgets right out of the chute. So the manufacturers are expecting us not just to be pioneers in being willing to put the material on the ground and have our sales guys walk into a lumber dealer with a sample under their arms. They're expecting us to be pioneers in how we bring these materials to market and how we introduce demand into a product that the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic region haven't heard of. So for us, that required us to really take a step back and take on a broader role selling downstream to the architects, the specifiers, the folks that are ultimately going to be putting these materials on projects, and helping them to become aware of new products, new processes, new ways of building things that they may not have considered before.
I saw you posted something on LinkedIn just last week, I think, about that exact idea. And your post caught my eye, and I think several other people, because it had tons of engagement, because you specifically called out the fact that you are starting to rep a new product that effectively cannibalizes other products you already have as part of your portfolio. Can you talk a little bit about the decision that went in behind that and, like, what's the why behind why you think that's the right decision?
One of the things I said in that post was one of my greatest teachers had a line that said, if it ain't broke, smash it. And I really like that because, you know, one of my father's mantras, and this is not unique to him, most business people have heard this, but it's grow or die. And if you're not looking to reinvent your own business, somebody else will do it for you. That's what the innovator's dilemma states. And if we rest on our laurels, we let the grass grow under our feet, then one day we'll just be laying down in the grass.
All right, Jordan. So in light of everything you've talked about the evolution that Russin has gone under from a distribution and how you sell, the conversations that you have, I want to ask you about one of the most buzzworthy, hottest trending topics in our industry right now. By the way, our industry has gotten very cool over the last couple of years. Lumber prices were a hot topic. Who ever knew that we would all be just so wanted in cocktail conversations? Who knew? So one of the things that is in every newsletter from our industry right now is a well-known billionaire, Brad Jacobs. He has staked his claim that the home products industry, specifically distribution, as I understand, is his next great venture. And there's not a ton of detail from what I've seen other than him saying there's loads of opportunity, hard agree, and that he wants to disrupt how we currently do things. Very little detail about what that means and what the new is. I'm interested in what your thoughts are of how do you see that playing out? What do you think he sees? What do you think he's going to change? Or maybe you don't want to give him ideas about what to change.
I think a lot of it is up in the air. I think the statements that are out there are pretty vague right now. And until he makes his first acquisition, I think the market is going to be wondering as to exactly what lane he's going to play in. He's used the term distribution, but I'm not certain if he's talking about folks like me, traditional two-step distribution, or is he thinking about somebody like an ABC Supply or a BFS that gets products directly to market, or both, potentially. I think that's all TBD. But frankly, I welcome what his intent is, because one thing I think that is obvious is our industry, as wonderful as it is and as innovative as it's been over the last decade, is still rife with inefficiency. And somebody with a technological mindset such as Mr. Jacobs is bound to bring some new technologies to the industry that can help to limit that inefficiency. I mean, you and I have had a nice discussion about the way we market products downstream. But at the end of the day, we still need to put materials on trucks and drive them several hundred miles and get them to dealers, offload them, put them on another truck and get them to a job site. And every time we do that, there's an opportunity to do it better, to reduce the amount of miles, to reduce the amount of air that we're shipping, and to think a little bit more creatively about how those materials are getting to the site. And sometimes it takes an outsider who hasn't been grown up in this industry the way that I did to think about things a little differently. And I think that's just going to make all of us better.
I love that. I think it's a great point. It would be great to know what he means by the word distribution. There's a lot of terms in our industry that mean many things to many people. So that's actually a really great point. Any opportunity for new eyes and new technology? That was the first thought I had when I read that. I was like, you want to bet that guy doesn't go after it with a fax machine and a pen and paper and a spreadsheet to track customers? I'm darn sure that's like chopping block number one, right? There's no chance we're going to do this huge investment and then do it from an analog standpoint, not bring the best technology into this new venture. So I'm excited to see how that helps further the whole industry. That would be my expectation, is it shouldn't be a bulldoze, because that's not fun for anyone, including even if it's Mr. Jacobs being the prime investor and then just winning the whole thing and creating a monopoly. That doesn't feel fun, right? What should be a, how does this further everything that we all get to do and then get to ride this really cool wave of innovation and get people's really great ideas brought to fruition? If that's the case, I'm pro. I think there's some con scenarios, but we can have that for another day. All right, Jordan, I've got one last, frankly, slightly selfishly motivated question for you before I let you go. You started by saying that distributors, if you grow or die, if you want to grow, marketing has to be part of that equation. What advice would you give to other distributors and dealers who have a hard time justifying or knowing how marketing or what marketing would result in positive benefits and would result in ROI?
One thing that I think is critical is a distributor today has to add its own value. And that means you can't just take the sales collateral, the marketing collateral that a vendor gives you, slap a logo on it and call it good. We did that in the 90s and it was good. Today, it's not acceptable. For a distributor to have value to the dealer and ultimately to the consumer, you have to put your own spin on things and think of what are you doing that enables sales of that product, aside from putting it on trucks and getting it to dealers' yards. Today, we have to think a little bit smarter about how we get the materials to market, and that takes adding our own value through marketing. The other thing that I think is it's really important to look at your business not as a distributor or as a salesperson or as a sales leader, but as a consumer. And at the end of the day in our lives, we're all consumers and we all go out and buy stuff. We all have the consumer experience every single day. That's something that's common to all of us. So if you think constructively about what you want that to look like, then inherently that helps you to build a better mousetrap for additional machines.
Jordan, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for this great conversation. Loads of incredible insights and just really good nuggets along the way. For our listeners, thank you for your time. If you want to hear more great episodes like this, head to venvio.com/podcast to subscribe. Until next time, I'm Beth Popnikolov. Thanks, everybody.